Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content meant for guys that are up in the North or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. And also brought to you by LS Tractor. LS Tractor is known for building top-quality, high-value tractors. Headquartered in Brattleboro, North Carolina, they specialize in tractors ranging from 22 to 101 horsepower. LS Tractor offers a full line of subcompact, compact, and utility tractors, as well as a growing list of implements and attachments. LS Tractor is committed to providing personal customer service and quality products through an exceptional dealer network throughout the U.S. and Canada. For more information on LS Tractor or LS Tractor products, please visit lstractorusa.com. Start blue, stay blue. And also brought to you by NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I use NCX. NCX helps over 20,000 American landowners like you understand and maximize the value of every acre. Find new revenue streams for your land with programs like timber, carbon, wildlife habitat, solar energy, and more. Get started with a free account at ncx.com and discover the true value of your land. I'm your host, Joe Baia, here today with my co-host, Nick Williams. Today, Nick, we're going to be talking about how you can use game cameras to pattern and kill mature bucks. I have been able to do this with success just about every season for about the last 10. Maybe not the killing part, but I definitely had my opportunity. Stuff happens. But, you know, I definitely got my shot. And I can honestly say that it wouldn't have been possible without game cameras. I know as a young guy, I got to spend a lot of time in the stand and I scouted a lot. And, you know, because I didn't have as many obligations. I just didn't have as many responsibilities. And I figured some stuff out in those years. But, you know, I just don't have as much time as I used to get out there and figure them out. It doesn't mean I don't want to connect every year. What about you? Have you been able to use game cameras? Do you feel like, man, I couldn't have done this without game cameras?
So I'm actually, next year may be the first year that I've run cell cameras in a long time. I ran them in college. And then for so many years, I was able to, like you said, just spend that time out in the woods every day, you know, kind of had an easy laid back lifestyle, didn't have as many responsibilities. And, but I'm ashamed to say this past year is the first year in a long time I did not shoot a mature buck. I did not see a mature buck. I did not get in the zip code of a mature buck. So I'm already 3 days after the season ends, I'm scheming and dreaming about next year, round two, trying to make my comeback. And I'm looking hard at some cellular trail cameras. So I'll be really interested to hear what Mark has to say about these new ones here at Moultrie.
Well, there's definitely a lot to it, Nick. You know, having the data is the first step, but then being able to actually decipher that data and pull it into a pattern where you can actually go hang a tree stand and hunt is a whole different thing. That's what we're getting into today. And to do that, we're talking with Mark Olis at Moultrie Mobile. Mark, before we get into talking about how to pattern and really connect with these mature bucks, tell us more about what you do at Moultrie Mobile and a little bit about the team. We were talking a little bit before we started recording, and you tell me y'all have 30 people devoted to this app and really devoted to the Moultrie Mobile way of doing things.
Yeah, it's more than 30. You know, when we were at ATA show this year, our VP of software was there. So, you know, I got to sit and talk to him in the booth and everything like that. And that was one of the questions I posed because I'm always seeing new faces around here. And I'm like, who's that? Who's that? I just got an email like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, a new hire, a Harvard graduate. You know, it's like, wow. it's so cool to see that. But yeah, Moultrie Mobile, we're based here in Birmingham, Alabama. You know, we're a tech company. We make, you know, cellular connected devices for hunters and landowners. And we have a lot of customers that use our cameras for security options. But on the software side, so that's the app side, you know, we've got more than 30 people working on that alone. And And that's why, you know, it's not a third party app. Moultrie Mobile built this app from the ground up. So our team builds it. So they're able to maneuver and be quick. And, you know, if there's ideas, we listen to customer feedback through our customer success team, and they let us know what customers want in the app. You know, hey, this feature, you know, we're looking for this. So they can be nimble and move and put that in their scope of work. But I myself work on our marketing team. So I'm our senior brand relations manager. A lot of what I do is work with various partners, whether it be media, influencers, ambassadors, just the whole gamut of people out there that help represent Moultrie Mobile and our brand and get our message out there, which is neat because I get to learn how, you know, a lot of other folks around the country use our system. It is a robust platform, so there's a lot of different ways you could use it. And yeah, that's what I do here.
Very cool. Well, you know, what's interesting to me about what you just said is the fact that you got 30 different brains thinking about this, listening to customer feedback. I'm sure getting a lot of great ideas from people. I know I kind of have my way that I use game cameras to help me pattern wildlife, but that doesn't mean that my way is the way. I mean, I learn from other people all the time. Nick and I go back and forth, you know, comparing notes about what we know from in the field observations to what we see, you know, kind of comparing game camera photos to weather patterns and lunar phases and all these different data points that are out there. But, you know, the point of today's show is to really help people dial in on specific deer that they are targeting and connect with them and using game cameras as a tool to do that. The first thing I want to talk about is placement of those cameras. So, you know, right now, most of my cameras are set up to kind of function in a couple of ways. One is going to be to help me pattern animals, but the other is also just, I got them on food plots. They help me keep an eye on my food plots. They keep me help me keep an eye on how things are growing, how things are doing. I kind of have a few strategically placed to keep an eye on ingress and egress points on my property to make sure I kind of see who might be coming and going. Hopefully no one other than the people I want out there, but they help me do that too. But when it comes to, you know, placement of those game cameras, what's your thought process on how to strategically place them if you're focused on mature bucks?
Yeah. So when focusing in on mature bucks, you know, at our lease, you know, we're a small club of family members, best friends. So we're very like-minded. And when we started a decade ago, we said, look, let's just protect all the young bucks. Let's just make it a rule. You know, we'll do our best to shoot 4.5 year old and better. And there was a lot of education involved in that with the guys to make sure. And everyone's done great. But when we find, you know, mature bucks on the property, that's when we start, you know, trying to hone in. And to your point, a lot of our cameras are on food plots. They're on feeders. You know, we plant the food plots in mid to late September. We usually get feeders rolling in August. And that's kind of our first step, you know, let's see what's out there. What are we even trying to gauge or go after? And then once we find a mature buck or, you know, maybe several, you know, we start to see, okay, is he only showing up on these certain feeders? And if he is, then it's where else is that deer? We're trying to then, you know, say, what is that deer doing? He's obviously hitting this area, but where is he bedding? You know, where else is this deer traveling? And where we hunt, it's pretty rugged terrain. It's East Central Alabama. It's the very end of the Appalachians there. So you've got deep hollers and, you know, it's tough hunting. I'll say that the mature bucks win more times than not on our place, because you start to deal with thermals and stuff in those hilly terrain, and getting in there without being detected is really tough. So, you know, kind of a strategy that we implement on that place specifically is, let's stay out of those areas where we know we're going to just bust deer out, and let's go in there after season. This is the perfect time of year. Let's go find those rub lines. Where can we intersect this buck where we're not going to spook them? We're not going to blow them out of the area. And that could be a number of ways. Could be along, you know, creek drainages where we can actually come in and access through those and maybe walk up the creek where in the morning, when you got those light winds and thermals, that creek will actually carry your scent downstream. So it is being strategic in how you do it. And then once the rut, you know, pre-rut, rut, once you start finding those rub lines and scrape lines and you know, what are those connecting bedding areas? Like, you know, what are these deer doing? I'll start placing cameras on those and I'll start working backwards. I may set several cameras up. One specific place is on a really steep, brushy ridge with these benches in it. And I noticed this one bench had a lot of, you know, in years past, I'd found scrapes and rubs. We never hunted it because it's really hard to access. And honestly, we didn't think the deer were using that super steep ridge like that. Well, come to find out, I put three cameras along a rub line this early October. I went in there. So I went in there not knowing what's in there. So, you know, to your point, I didn't know if a mature buck was in there or not, but I went ahead and placed those cameras early so I can have them giving me that info. Well, come to find out, it's a heavy travel corridor for daylight deer movement. So that spot actually, and I did have mature bucks. Now, it wasn't like a clockwork thing, right? So there were still patterns to look at. You know, we were talking earlier, it's like, maybe he's on a circuit every 5 days, every 10 days. It was kind of, that's when you started, you know, to have to drill in and look. But as it got closer to the rut, the buck movement increased drastically in the daylight on that particular area. So that, you know, that's just an example of one spot. I didn't even have a buck in mind, put the cameras there and I put them all on the same trail. And I actually found where those deer, one of those cameras was revealing where the deer were bedding up higher and then accessing that bench. So that helped me kind of hone in on like, all right, this is a spot there that's got potential for a stand site.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm already learning something because a lot of my camera placement is what I would call mostly just inventory. You know, like you said, that early season period is when you're going to set up on a very well-used food source and you're just trying to get a feel for what's out there and maybe pick a deer to target or some deer to target. Also helps you educate other people that are hunting and knowing, hey, is this deer mature? You know, so that when you see them for the first time in the woods, that's not the first time you've seen them and you kind of already made a decision. But I really like what you're saying about using multiple cameras in the same location. I'm kind of analytical in my approach to life. And so, you know, if I'm looking at a 200 acre piece of property, I'm going to want a camera like evenly placed around the property. You know, I want to have it like a little grid, but you're more like, hey, let's descend upon this rub line, put multiple cameras in close proximity to each other. And that's really telling you direction of travel, time of day, and really helping you get a feel for how these deer use the landscape in relation to different weather patterns that are there. One of the things that I've always struggled with is gaining any real knowledge about targeting a deer in the daytime from nighttime photos. I've kind of gotten to the point where when I see a nighttime photo, I'm like, there he is, but I don't even pay any attention to it. You know, it's just kind of like, I can't shoot him at night, so I'm not going to worry about what this tells me. Have you learned anything? Have you guys, has your team learned anything about nighttime movement that helps you find deer in the daytime?
I've really gotten like you as well. You see so many of those nighttime images of that deer. And the only thing I would say that a nighttime image has given us is maybe revealing a deer on the property, or as you get into the rut, a new deer has shown up. So that deer, he's clearly been there, and it may be something you need to act on sooner rather than later because he's a newer deer. But you don't, I mean, it doesn't tell you a lot. Is that deer moving in the daylight? Now, you may then get pictures of that deer in the daylight, that new buck. We always get new deer that come onto our property during the rut, but also, you know, in that February stretch where we're at, the rut starts winding down, but we get new bucks hitting those feeders like crazy because they're worn down, they're thinner, and they're just looking for food. And, you know, so we did have one buck kind of, he would show up at this one plot right before daylight. And then right around sunup, he would hit another feeder and he was just trying to get as many calories as he could. So that was one buck. Now he ended up not being a, you know, a mature buck that he's probably about 3.5. So we were going to let him pass. But that deer, you know, if you're just looking at the one image, it's a nighttime image, but he was working his way to other feeders in the late season and hitting that one in a shooting scenario where it's legal shooting light.
One of the things I was able to learn from nighttime photos this year was really a very, very early morning photo. It was, you know, about 4 o'clock in the morning, so still not shooting light, but it gave me the direction of travel on a mature buck we had on our property we call Buford. And what he was doing was using our property at night and then moving off the property. I had a camera set up right at one of our corners on a real well-used trail. And I kept getting him leaving about 4 o'clock in the morning. So that what that was telling me was that I'm pretty sure I've got his bedding area pinpointed. He's moving back in there to bed. And then we'd get pictures of him in the daylight. But, you know, one of the things that I've also struggled with beyond the nighttime photos is post-season photos. Right now, deer season's just ended in Alabama. I'm getting deer on camera, but I'm wondering, like, how can I use this information to help me next year? Rut's ended. It's post-season. I mean, I can't shoot a deer in late February next year either. How are you using that post-season time frame to give you data that can help you make decisions to connect?
Yeah, I mean, most of the postseason images. So in my hunting camp, you know, all of us guys are on a text message string. I'm sure like most of you guys, you have your hunt camp group. And so with Moultrie Mobile, really quick, one of the features we added this winter, it's the newest feature added to the app, is camera sharing. So you can now share those cameras with anyone you want, and you can pick the camera you want to share. And they can't change any of the settings or anything, but they have full viewing. So I've got that set up with the hunt camp group now. And so these guys, you know, it's funny because every morning guys are sending pictures like, hey, this one made it, you know? So it's really like, I mean, we're going to work towards next season anyways, but it's kind of that motivator, like, all right, this is worth it. Let's keep going, guys. Like, look who made it, you know?
Yeah, I wish Butch was here to record with us today, because I know he would really appreciate that feature, because he and his dad kind of, they have some cameras they share information on, and they have some cameras they don't, you know? And I know he would like that. Yeah, Dad, you can look at this one. It's right by camp, you know, but I'm not giving you access to the super secret one. That's a really neat feature, though. I've really enjoyed, you know, being able to share game camera photos with other people that hunt my property, and now they can be, you know, on the app. It sounds like as addicted to it as I am.
Absolutely. You don't have to text them anything. You don't have to say, hey, check this deer out, download an image. They just get access and they go on and they can scroll, you know, whenever they want.
Very cool. Well, you know, you guys make a number of different cameras. Of course, with cell cameras, you got to have good connection, but are there certain types of cameras that you prioritize in certain scenarios or locations?
What do you mean by that? Like maybe one of our other cameras over another or something like that?
Yeah. So, you know, take, for example, I've got a portion of my property where we always have a hard time getting a signal down there. You know, like most of the property, we text message back and forth what we're seeing. But the guy who's sitting down in the rattlesnake patch, you know, you're not going to be able to get a hold of him. You know, yeah. It's just not a real good signal. If somebody is in an area where that maybe they're real remote or they're having those kind of challenges, is there anything they can do? Like, are there stronger signal cameras or more feature-rich cameras? Like, when you look at the lineup that y'all make, what are you getting for going up and stepping up a level?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally get what you're saying. So the cool thing about our Edge series cameras, and that's what we came out with, the Edge 2 years ago, the Edge Pro last year, and then this summer we'll have the Gen 2 models of those Edge series. One of the things that makes those cameras work great in those situations is they've got an auto connect function. So with the Edge cameras, you're no longer, when you buy it, you're not pigeonholed into a Verizon or an AT&T. The Edge actually work on all the major networks. And so what that means is you can, when you turn the Edge camera on, it starts scanning for the strongest signal in your area and auto connects to it. So there's no SIM cards to switch out, anything like that. You turn it on, and it's going to look for the strongest signal. And the other thing that the Edge cameras do is these cameras were designed to work more efficiently on lower cellular coverage areas, because there are lots of places where you hunt like that. And just a quick example at our place, as I mentioned, it's very rugged. We don't get a lot of great cell coverage out there either. And some places, to your point, like we can't even text out. But I've got four spots where over the past 10 years or 8 years, I've tried all kind of cameras. I mean, every, not just Moultrie Mobile. And I have never had a camera send me images from those spots. 2 years ago, when the Edge came out, I said, all right, let's test how this works. And I put those cameras in each of those four spots. And now I get images and videos sent out of those areas. So that's that auto connect feature with the Edge series camera has been a game changer for those low coverage areas.
Mark, I want to come in and say, I know you and Joe, y'all sound like really avid cell camera users. I know Joe in particular there at his lease, he's been using them for a long time, and he likes showing me the pictures and I like looking at them. But unlike both of you guys, instead of having a lease, I hunt a lot of public land. So you've got big, maybe 40, 50,000 acre tracts, and I have five or six of those within a couple hours of my house. But I've never got into cell cameras, and it's not so much. I know a lot of guys on public land don't like them because they're worried about theft or something like that. My big hang up with a cell camera has always been that I have some properties that are AT&T properties, and I have some properties that are Verizon properties, and I have some properties where I'd love to know what the carrier was that you got signal out there on that piece of property. So it was last year I was talking with a good friend up in Northwest Mississippi. Same type scenario, hunts public land, a lot of really rural, remote, swampy tracks. And he mentioned that he had picked up an Edge, and he said, oh, you don't have to worry about it. Like, it picks up on whatever's the strongest signal. So that was kind of the start of me becoming cell curious, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I had my first child, and so my time to hunt has dropped drastically. I've always been pretty privileged in that I can get out in the woods, in the past, really almost every day, and do a lot of boots on the ground scouting and kind of keep my finger to the pulse. And that changed in a really big way in the last season. So with all that said, I'm looking at cameras, and something that I'm trying to determine, I don't really see a point in just going out and buying one, because there's so much property that I have that I would like to hunt. I'd like to get several of them. And what I'm trying to do is find out what my budget is and find out where would be the best place to put these cameras. I've got some tracks that I hunt that are relatively small tracks, 400 or 500 acres. I've got some tracks that are a couple thousand acres, 40,000 acres. But something that I've been wondering, is there kind of a general rule of thumb for how many cameras you like to have out per acre? Is that a good way to look at it? Or is there some other criteria that you're looking at when you're determining, hey, here's a piece of property and here's how many cameras I'm going to put out on it to feel like I've got a good sense of what deer movement is?
Yeah. So, we used to kind of look at it like that, like, all right, per acre, what's the answer? And unfortunately, it's per acre is hard to go off of because, terrain features and the way deer funnel through properties and, swamps and ridges and all these different things. So, like our property, it would be really hard to say, hey, here, this many per acre, because there is so many terrain features that if you just simply did that, you're either going to be in a spot where there's not a lot of activity, or you may be missing a spot where the deer are really moving through good. So, it's much more about what you found, the terrain, the sign. As I mentioned earlier, I put three cameras on that one rub line, and gosh, that was probably only a quarter mile long, but I learned so much info. So if I only ran one camera there and it was in the middle, I wouldn't have found that spot where they're coming off the ridge out of their bedding. So it's really hard to say. It would be more of a matter of, what's your budget? How many can you get? Because that's really what's going to determine how many you can run. And for you on the public land where you've got so much land and access, I mean, gosh, you could go crazy with that. So it's going to be very individualized, and it's really hard to say how many, because, I work with a lot of different folks around the country that hunt. And some of these guys, I mean, they've got five or six cameras in a 10 acre area, but they want to know where that deer is coming from. And another thing I'll say that has really helped me, like when I'm kind of setting those cameras and seeing what's going on, is running it in video mode, because, man, you're just able to see where he came from, where he's headed. It just shows you so much more detail of what that animal's doing. I've learned a lot through the video mode.
Nick, you know, one of the things I've learned too, because I went into it with that same kind of mindset of, like I mentioned earlier, like, let's set this property up like a grid and let's kind of figure out what's going on this 40 and that 40 and the next 40 and the next 40. But what's been really interesting is comparing game camera photos to hunter observations in the exact same location. So, I mean, I've had hunters out hunting where they can see my camera, and what they come back and tell me is totally different than the picture I was getting from the camera. You know, like I was seeing some of the deer on camera, but they're like, oh no, there was, you know, six more on this other trail over here. And this year in particular, we had had a guy out and he saw an absolute, to his take, mega giant on our property, like a Boone and Crockett whitetails. And he's killed a couple that were borderline Boone and Crockett. And, you know, I'm looking at that going, I haven't seen anything like that on camera, nowhere. And this is, you know, hunters like to tell stories, but I know this guy pretty well. Like he's not a storyteller. And so I think you're exactly right, Bart. You get as many as you can afford and can afford to run. But I like what you're saying is really canvas an area and figure out exactly what they're doing. And then maybe you could move your entire setup to another location altogether.
That's right. Or leave one behind. Yeah. Leave one behind. Now you know where the spot is. You found it. Get those others, go find other areas and leave one behind. Yeah.
What's been a lot of fun for me over the last decade or so running trail cameras, not just cell cams, but it's become cell cams now, but even before cell cams were out, is really starting to build up a data library on particular deer. And one of the things I've always focused on is daylight photos, mature deer, and not just bucks. Like if I could tell, hey, this is mature doe, like she's, you know, she's a big bodied doe, she's long neck doe, like this is an older deer that's been around a few seasons, you start to pay attention to, and I start to pay attention to various data points that I'm getting with these photos, you know. So that camera may be giving me the temperature and it may be giving me the lunar phase and the time of day, but then I'll go back and compare that to historical weather. And, you know, if I can know that, hey, I've got the picture of this deer January 17th, and on that day, the temperature was 60 degrees, and it was the evening before a really big cold front came through, and the wind was out of the west, I've got some data points there that I can compare to the next time I get a daytime photo of that particular deer. And what I've been able to do with success is start to develop patterns, even with an animal that I'm only getting a picture of once every 5 days, once every 10 days, because what I start to notice is that at least on food sources, they want a particular set of conditions. They want certain winds. And I assume it's because their bedding areas allow that wind allows them to move from their bedding area to that food source and kind of smell what's out there before they make the leap to come out into the open. And I've been able to tag some deer over the years doing that and building up those data points. What about you, Mark? How do you interpret the data you're collecting on a personal level? But then also you guys and the team there are interpreting a lot of data, right? Y'all are collecting a lot of data and are able to kind of see patterns with all this. How can people use their game cameras to interpret this data?
Yeah. So kind of going back to what you said earlier, Nick, you know, you've got a family now, your time. So I've got kids and they're older. They play sports. They do. So, you know, with work and everything, I'd love to pretend like I hunt all the time, but I'm a weekend warrior, you know, like, so I don't get as hung up because I don't have the time to really drill in, like, and say, all right, I'm going to hunt this deer on this one. It's like, I'm able to go, like, I'm just giddy. So I'm using it more as I know what's in the area, you know, and then I'm going to play the wind based on, I may not have it dialed in to all the different winds, but I at least know I'm not going to booger this area up. Yeah, I know where they're bedding or whatnot. So I kind of use it that way. But inside the app, there are so many ways. So we have filters in there. So to your point, you were talking about like temperatures, daylight photos. You can go in those filters and you can, you know, we have the AI technology in the system. So you can look at just your buck images. So you can go over to smart tags, click bucks only. That way your gallery is only going to have bucks. Then you can go down and say, all right, I only want to see daylight images. Now it's only going to show you bucks that have moved in the daylight. And you can even filter with temperature ranges. So to your point, you know, if you get a temperature drop or something like that, And so even if you haven't maybe gone back and done your homework, like you're saying, you can use those filters to kind of hone in and see those patterns. So, you know, that's just one way you can use it. And again, with all the different folks I work with around the country, you find guys that drill super deep into that stuff, and then others that, you know, not as much. So it is interesting how folks use it, but those filters are a great way to start learning some of that info to arm yourself with when hunting those specific deer.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of the businesses that make this show free for you every episode. This week's show is brought to you by First South Farm Credit. What does a farm mean to you? Maybe it's just a piece of land where you can go relax or enjoy the outdoors. Whatever the farm means to you, First South Farm Credit can help you finance or refinance that perfect piece of land. As a successful financial cooperative, First South shares its profits with its borrowers in the form of a patronage refund, which lowers your cost of borrowing. To find out how First South can help you, visit their website at firstsouthland.com or call them at 800-955-1722. They are an equal housing lender. And also brought to you by Mallard Bay Outdoors. MallardBay.com is the Airbnb-style marketplace for discovering and booking your next guided hunting and fishing adventures. The Mallard Bay platform was built by sportsmen for sportsmen. Their mission is to help expand access to affordable and successful hunting by connecting you with verified outfitters across the United States. You can browse trips and prices by state or species, select the dates you'd like to go, message outfitters, and secure your dates all from one platform, mallardbay.com. Not sure where you want to go yet? Reach out on Instagram or Facebook, and they can help you find your dream hunt.
Mark, that's another thing that I'm super interested in is, while I haven't ran cameras for years, I've been kind of a believer in big data when it comes to deer hunting and trying to like identify long-term trends. I know I've hunted with people who said, well, you could see a mature buck anywhere at any time. And that's just a hard thing to hunt, you know, like it's just hard to leave something up to chance for me. So years ago, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the like old Dr. Bob Shepard. He wrote a book on some work that he did, some research he did for a lodge here in Alabama, where he was looking at, you know, a couple of decades of trends in hunting and taking hunters out there, you know, every day, twice a day, all through season, and making them report whether they saw deer, whether they shot deer. And he kind of wrote in that book about that trend. And then we've had in recent years, the folks at like MSU, Deer Lab, Penn State, they're doing those collar studies. And I've really tried to keep up on that and pay attention to what that's saying about deer movement. They're coming out with some new and exciting findings that kind of run contrary to what you've traditionally heard in the hunting camp as far as theories of what makes deer move. What all in your app? I know we've touched on it briefly, but as it stands at this point, that new AI that y'all have, that new app, what are all the different factors that it keeps track of specifically as far as like temperature, wind direction, GPS location, time of day, moon phase, that sort of thing? How many variables are you tracking there on that app?
So on the game plan predictive model, which came out this fall, that we've introduced to the Moultrie mobile app. So it's machine learning AI system. And going back to our app team, we've had folks working on that for over 2 years to really dial that thing in and get it where it's working at a high accuracy level. And so our predictive model is, there's nothing else out there like that. And I'm not saying that from a marketing term. And I'll tell you why is it's a dynamic system. So our predictive model is, so Joey, you're in Russell County. So you could find your on the maps section of our app. We've got a full map feature. You would find your hunting camp. And then when you click into that game plan, you can drop a pin on your location. Or if you're near a city, you could enter zip, city, stuff like that. And then what it's telling the system to do is saying, okay, now I want you to look at this localized area. And what it's using, some of what it's using is actual Moultrie mobile trail cam data coming in. So it's anonymous data. So it's not just looking at your cameras. It's looking at data coming in from any other Moultrie mobile cameras in that area. And you're not seeing any images. You're not getting any info. It's purely data inputs. And it's specifically tracking buck movement with that AI technology. So now we're looking at recent buck movement. It also has historic movement from past years layered in there. And it's using weather inputs that, you know, do dictate deer movement, either good or bad. You know, temperature drops, increased deer movement, you know, heat will decrease it. So it's a dynamic system that's using localized data from your cameras, tracking buck movement, and it puts all this together in the algorithm to give you that predictive look. So it's historical, it's recent, it's weather features all rolled into one. And the cool thing is, you know, our team spent 2 years doing this, and they input every kind of anything that, you know, even the myth stuff you talk about in deer camp, why deer move, they input everything. And then they tracked what actual bucks were doing because we have that data coming into the system, and it only has things that correlated to increased or decreased deer movement in it.
That's really interesting to me, especially as somebody who realistically, I can't afford to put 100 cameras out in the woods, but it sounds like if you're on the Moultrie Network,
you've got more than that out.
Yeah, if he's got 10 or 20 cameras out there, then I've got access at least to a little piece of the information that his cameras are bringing in. I think that's a huge leg up. And as somebody who's getting into this for the first time, that sounds like the strongest selling feature I've heard a brand offer, that you have access to that kind of information and that kind of machine learning. That's really impressive. That has piqued my interest.
I like the fact that it's localized. I mean, that's a big deal, right? Because, you know, what my deer do, and Nick and I compare notes a lot of times, but what my deer do in Russell County is very different than what his deer may be doing, you know, near his place in Baldwin County. And, you know, just 3 hours drive difference, we get a lot different activity. And you've always heard people say, no, this is, you know, deer crepuscular, they're going to move at dawn and dusk. And it's like, well, I mean, I don't know. The data might say that, but I can tell you, we see them all day long at my place, like just all day long, middle of the day. There's not a rhyme or reason to it necessarily about the time of day. It's what I've noticed it being more around is some of those things you were talking about. If we get a big temperature swing, deer activity increases. You know, this year I was able to really hone in on a particular pattern that I'd never noticed before. But you, as hunters, I think we want to be out in the woods when it's cold. Like, I think we just like being out there when it's cold. It's more enjoyable to be out there when it's cold. But I started getting pictures of this same buck on my property, and he was always out there when the temperature was between 60 and 62 degrees. I didn't get any other daylight photos of him other than 60 to 62 degrees. And I was thinking, that's a weird kind of correlation. I wonder if this is just random, but it just kept happening. Every single picture I was getting in the low 60s every time. And so I started going back and looking at those days. And what I noticed was that every single one of those days, there was a big front coming. And so it wasn't necessarily that, you know, it was going to be real, real cold the next morning, but that next day it was going to be really cold. And he would be out there like clockwork. And that was actually how we ended up catching up with him. Is I told Nick, I said, look at this front right here. I said, how much you want to bet we're going to see this deer Friday afternoon whenever we get up there? And one of the other things that we learned about that deer in particular was we kind of were able to figure out where he was bedding based off of how he was using certain food sources. And what I learned was that we were entering the property basically going right through his bedding area. And it was one of those deer where you just wouldn't have thought, but he was bedded right near the gate. I mean, he was just bedded right near the gate. He was one of those deer. So we switched it up on him, and we came around on the other side of the property. We came in from a way that it's way out of the way. It's a big, you know, pain in the butt to go do, but we did it. We came in and hunted him on that, you know, that pre-front pattern. It was a warm afternoon, and sure enough, there he was the first time. Wow. We did it in the daylight. Have you had any specific scenarios like that where you were like, I just wouldn't have killed this deer if it wouldn't have been for game cameras or this data?
Yes. So the cell cameras for sure. Now, not so much to how specific you were. I mean, that's a super cool story, by the way. Like, I mean, that's very specific. And kudos to you for cracking the code.
It was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool. But one instance that comes to mind for me big time is my daughter. She just turned 11. She loves to hunt. She got her first deer when she was 8 with me, and you know, it was a food plot where a lot of doe activity coming in there. So, you know, I knew where to go. Again, I think the Sunday afternoon of youth season. That was all we had. So again, you know, she plays softball and all this, so we're going. And I said, all right, we've got the right wind. It's going to be, you know, nice and cool. This field has been hot. Let's go. And sure enough, she got her first deer, a big doe. Fast forward to the very next year, we have youth weekend, you know, planned. It's like, all right, we're going, you know, we've got it on the calendar. And we were after a buck. It was going to be her first buck. So we weren't being picky. And about 5 days before we went, this really nice 8-point, 3.5-year-old 8-point starts showing up in that same field that she got her first deer. The deer hadn't been there. He hadn't been coming there. And all of a sudden he's there, and he's there every afternoon. And I'm like, we're going. Like he's in there. Like that was the recent intel that we were able to get. And so we get in the stand, we get set up, we get the gun out the window, and she's ready. And, you know, the deer start coming into the field. And then we had a lane this way here, that buck steps out and we got the gun out this window. And so with her being young, it's like, all right, well, he's going to have to come this way, you know? And sure enough, he comes right down the lane, walks within 20 yards of the shooting house and goes right out in that plot, just like he'd been coming out there. And she was able to harvest her first buck. And so that's the one that sticks out to me where the game camera was a major factor in helping us know where to go and spend that time for the hunt.
You know, that's a cool story because, like you said, it gave you the confidence to just keep that gun out that window. You knew where that deer was going. You know, you didn't need to shuffle around and try to make a move, and you felt really confident going there. I have noticed that game cameras will kind of get me up off my butt sometimes. You know, I'm kind of like, you may be down in the doldrums, you not really feel like you're on them, and then all of a sudden, bam, you get a daylight photo and you're like, all right, time to go. It's time to get after them. But one of the things I know I've made mistakes on with game cameras is thinking that I'm seeing it all. You'll have these periods where you just don't think you're like, man, we're just not really seeing any bucks on camera. And you kind of start to get discouraged, and you almost are like, I don't know, I guess it's just going to be one of those years. And then you go hunt and you're like, wow, we really weren't seeing every, you know, like there's a bunch of deer out here, you know, we just weren't seeing them. So that's probably my biggest mistake, is maybe relying on them a little bit too much, and letting them can also discourage me from time to time. I've learned that you still need to go hunting, and you still need to scout, and you still need to do everything you were doing before. But game cameras, for me, they're a tool. They help you put together a pattern, but they're also just a lot of fun. I really enjoy on the weekends when I can't go hunting, or during the week when it's a beautiful cold day, but I'm, you know, in the office, like,
yeah,
check the game. It's a little temporary retreat to the hunting camp, you know, just to be able to check that stuff. What do you see as far as mistakes though? Like, what are people doing wrong with their game cameras that you're just seeing folks do over and over again?
You know, that was a good point there you said at the end though, like it keeps you connected to that hunt camp. And that's what I always, you know, explain to folks is like the Moultrie mobile cameras and app, it's, you're not able to be out there all the time, but you're still connected to those wild places that you love being in. And it is, it feels good. It's fun. It's enjoyable to do that. But I think your point is dead on with relying on them too much, because, I mean, let's face it, you still have to do your scouting and everything to know, like, if you slap it on some random tree, you may never see anything. Right. So, you know, it takes the woodsmanship and the scouting. You got to know where to put it, and then it can be useful. But again, it's a snapshot, right? It's a snapshot right here. If it was behind the camera, you got nothing. And so that's what, like, you know, I was saying, I've got limited time to hunt. So when I get a chance, those cameras are, to your point, a confidence booster to me. You know, I know there is a shooter in this area. I may or may not see it, but I'm going to go hunt because I have the confidence that deer is there. So I don't rely on the camera so specifically all the time like that. But a general rule is just kind of some of the 101 stuff that we see in the mistakes over and over. You know, like pointing that camera east or west. You know, if it's in the west, all your sunset pictures, you won't even see what that camera is taking a picture of. One of the guys, we got a new cutover, and one of the guys went and put a feeder up and put one of the cameras up, and he didn't even think about which way it was pointing, and it was pointing dead west. So every afternoon there'd be about 30 pictures, and I had no clue what was in them until the sun went down. You know,
yeah, I think we've all done that at one point. You know,
so it's so important. Like, you know, north or south is the way to do it. And you know, some people be like, well, maybe I don't have a tree there. You know, like we have camera stakes that go in the ground. You know, you can use a T post and strap the camera to it. So there's, you know, you wanna be thinking about those things. Where is the sun setting? I'm trying to think on the cell cam side, the edge cameras, they don't even have an SD card, and we remove the SD card from the edge cameras, because typically when a customer would call in and say, hey, my camera's not sending me images, it was a lot of times an SD card issue. Could have been the wrong SD card. They needed to format it. It got corrupt. You know, those are pretty cheap pieces of technology. And they proved to be the weakest link, really, in the cell cam. So that's why we moved away from it, put that internal memory in there, and the edge cameras have hands down beat any camera we've made in the past just by doing that one bit right there. And then, you know, another thing is just, you know, getting that camera in the right place. And, you know, if you're hanging it up high, well, make sure you have it angled down to get the view, things like that. And then another thing we'll see is just folks won't clear the brush out in front of the camera. You know, in the daylight, it doesn't seem to be a big deal. But at night, all that close vegetation is just getting whited out with the IR flash. And then you can't see what's behind it. So, you know, that's another thing. Take that time to kind of clear that area in front of it if there is grass or limbs. And, you know, when guys are placing cameras, looking at feeders, or maybe scrapes, you know, kind of the magic distance is like that 8 to 10 yards. That really gets you a nice, you get everything you're trying to see, but you get the nice detail. It's not some deer that's way off in the distance and you really can't tell what it is in the image. So, you know, that 10 yards is a great range. And then, you know, if it's on a trail or something, you know, aim that camera looking down the trail instead of, you know, right across it, because all you're going to do is get a deer. If a deer is running, you're going to get its rear end in the shot. You're not going to know what it was. But if you point it down the trail, man, you just get some beautiful images. And especially on video mode, you really get to see those deer coming and walking again, getting more of that complete picture.
Mark, I know you touched on two things that brought up bad memories from when I had a fleet of about six. Well, back in the day, I had about six regular trail cameras that I ran on public land, and those SD cards were a nightmare. And setting the cameras and checking them and keeping track of which SD card went in which camera when you're running multiples.
And reformatting them.
Trying not to corrupt a file, yep. And then once you know, if you put it on a good spot, a good funnel out in the swamp or a good island that deer were bedded on and you had lots of pictures, that was exciting. But then you knew, well, now I've got 500 pictures and I have to have a way to keep track of them and name them and sort through them and organize them. And it turned into just too much busy work for me. And then another thing that got to me was a lot of the places that I hunt, you have a lot of like frag and marsh grass and stuff like that. And I don't know if y'all have ever set up cameras in an environment like that, but every time the wind blows, you just see a sea of grass waving, and those cameras would trigger, and you would come back a month later and you would find out that your camera had died 27 days ago. You know, 3 days after you said it, it just constantly taking those pictures. When it comes to stuff like that, is there a way? I know now you can do so much stuff through those apps. You can look and check your battery, and stuff like that. Is there a way that you can adjust sensitivity or just turn a camera off? Like if you've messed up the camera placement, or I know what I've had is a week after you set it, a spider crawls up there in front of your lens and he starts doing his thing, and you have a National Geographic documentary about the life of a banana spider. Is that still the case, or have y'all figured that out yet? It seems like y'all figured out most of the problems that I had back then.
I like how you phrase that, a problem, because when specifically the Edge series of camera, which is the Edge or the Edge Pro, when we designed and set out to build that camera from the ground up, we said, okay, we're not just going to throw technology in here because it's cool or it's new or it's like, what are the problems and how can we use technology to fix it? And so, for example, no SD card, that was part of it, that part of the reliability. Well, so our Edge Pro, which was the next step up from the Edge, we decided, okay, what other problems can we address that hunters deal with? And so what we did with the Edge Pro is we put the AI technology in the camera. So it was the first camera that actually had the AI on board. So what that allows you to do is you now have more flexibility on things like you're saying, like our Edge camera, the regular one. It's just going to take a picture of whatever's in front of it. You can adjust the sensitivity of it, but with the Edge Pro, you can go in there and so you're setting up your cameras in those marshes, and you're probably targeting deer or maybe even hogs in season. With the Edge Pro, you can go in and you can say, all right, I only want you to send me images of deer or a buck or a doe or both or a hog, and that camera, it will take the image, so it's not going to fight against that aspect. But what it'll do is it'll immediately scan that image and say, is that target species there? If it's not, you never get that image. It won't even send it. So that saves a lot on battery life, not sending you all those junk images, but it also keeps your gallery feed nice and clean. Now, another part of that Edge Pro camera is we've got a smart zone. So it's a lot like a security camera, right? So you can go in for your individual camera, click on it, and click on smart zones, and you'll get an actual image from that camera. And say if the, now if it's tall marsh grass and it's all in the background, it's not going to really help there. But if you've got grass that's down low that's blowing, or maybe it's just over in an edge, or you have that tree limb that's fallen, and it's now blowing your camera up, you can turn those zones off and those will no longer trigger, but all the other zones will trigger. So you still get all the activity that comes through, but you're able to eliminate those problem areas, and it keeps you from having to go to your camera so often to fix it and things like that.
That's a nice feature. Being able to deal with your own screw ups after the fact is really nice, because I've definitely set mine up about every way wrong that you can. I really like what you were saying about setting it up looking down the trail. I'm bad about that. I just kind of, I think like a hunter, I think like, well, if I'm going to shoot this deer walking down this trail, I'm setting up that camera almost like I'd set up my tree stand. But I like the idea of catching them kind of coming and going. And I'm going to start using the video feature a lot more listening to you talk about that. You're exactly right. I mean, sometimes you just get a picture and you don't know which direction they entered the frame from. It really would help you determine how they're entering the area, maybe how they're leaving the area, which is valuable information if you're really trying to pattern where a bedding area might be. Getting that pattern together for me has always been about storing and sorting through these daylight photos. So I'll have several mature bucks on the property every year. And you start to say, okay, here he goes. There's a daylight photo of him. When I get excited, when that happens, because if I'm seeing him in the daylight, that means I can kill him. Like there's my chance. I just got to figure out, is the spot I'm getting a picture a spot I can hunt, or am I going to have to back off this trail a little bit or catch him, going? So how are you guys storing and sorting all that information? I've kind of done it in a redneck way, I guess, a high tech redneck, I guess. But I would take those photos and create albums and start to, put together, all right, here's Buford and here's Lucky. And, we kind of start to paint a picture of one particular deer and what he likes to do. You already mentioned the fact that you guys are using you know, AI to sort the daytime from the nighttime and the bucks from the does from the coyotes. How are you guys storing and sorting all this information in a usable manner?
So I'll speak specifically to the individual buck. So you've got your buck Buford that you mentioned. So you've named them. You're clearly monitoring this deer inside. So the AI at this point is not differentiating bucks, right? It's just like, this is a buck. This is a buck. Now down the road, you know, there'll be some cool things that we can do. But what you can do in the Moultrie mobile system, we have a custom tagging option. So you can just go in one time, go under custom tags and type up Buford and just save that. Now, when every time you get an image of Buford, you can go right below the image where it says custom tag, click on that, and you can have your list of whatever bucks on there you want, and you can click it. So it's a little bit of a manual process, but it's not, you don't have to download that image and put it in an album, take it somewhere else. You can just custom tag those. And again, you create that one time and then you just click a button. So now you've got a backlog of all your Buford images. So when you want to go back and look at that, you go under there, click custom tag, click Buford. Now your gallery only has Buford images in it. And then you can go and fine tune it, like, all right, just daylight images, you know, so you can do all that. But there's another feature in the app. You're talking about all the input coming in. We have something called activity charting. And what activity charting it does, so every image comes in, it's got temperature, time of day, those kind of things. Well, it gathers all that data from your cameras and it shows you readouts like bar graphs. And so it'll say like, all right, I want to see time of day. When is the activity? You know, you were mentioning in Russell County how deer are moving throughout the day. Well, you can go on there and quickly see a bar graph and you can select a date range as well of, you know, whatever you want. And you'll get a readout showing you the times of day that deer are actually moving. And then you can fine tune that down to, all right, I just want to see buck activity for these cameras. And then you're going to get a readout for only buck activity. And then you're saying, well, I just want to see it for this one specific camera. Well, you can click on that. And then it's going to give you a readout for buck activity on this camera. Well, you can then use your custom tags. Those follow along to activity charting. So now you can click on Buford and you're going to get a readout showing time of day, temperature ranges, all those things that Buford is being caught on camera during those time, those scenarios.
That's really cool. You're making my job a lot easier here. I really nerd out on this info. You know, I mean, I've got it there, I might as well try to develop a pattern. You're basically just telling me all I got to do is tell the system that this is a particular deer and it's going to be able to spit out this kind of detailed information based on multiple data points for me.
We look at everything as like, how can we help the hunter? How can we make it more enjoyable, save him time, give him all the knowledge he needs? I mean, you know, internally, that's what we say. The ultimate goal is Moultrie Mobile is the only app you need for all your hunt planning. You got your cameras, your weather, your mapping, your predictive, your activity charting. You don't have to go anywhere else to do all of that.
Well, Nick hit the nail on the head earlier. You know, he and I both have young children. We don't get to hunt as much as we used to, and I don't see that trend changing anytime soon. It's probably going to get a little worse before it gets any better. And you definitely don't need a game camera to kill a mature buck. I mean, you don't have to have it, but they're just so much fun. You know, I look at it and I just say, you know, this is really, it adds to my experience of hunting. It's not a crutch. It's just a tool. It allows me to get some data that I used to be able to get with just boots on the ground and time spent in the stand that I just don't have the ability to do nowadays. And it keeps me connected to my property and really every single day, you know, I'm able to kind of enjoy that as if I was living there, you know, and maybe that's something I'll be able to do in my retirement, but not right now. I think it's really cool what you guys are doing, really what the team is doing. I love that y'all are taking hunter feedback and incorporating what real hunters are needing in the field and developing the tools for them to be able to do that. The game plan system is really cool new feature. Just being able to have that localized information is really, really neat. I can't wait to see that in action. If folks want to go online, check out Moultrie Mobile, check out the game plan system, learn a little bit more about that, what's the best way for them to go kind of follow along with what you guys are innovating on.
Yeah. So multrimobile.com, we've got blogs, tons of stuff, all the products. You can buy anything from there. A lot of info on there. We have a Multrimobile YouTube channel. We have a lot of informative videos on there that really explain all those different, like, game plan and the different features. So we're always sure, you know, that we create something explaining the new technology. So the Multrimobile YouTube channel is a great place. But if people want to, you know, experience the app, they can do that for free. So if you download the Multrimobile app on your phone, before you even create an account, you'll see a demo button on there. They can click on that demo button, and that goes to the full features I've just talked about. You can use them, play with them, and those are linked to cameras in the field. So there's deer, there's turkey, there's hogs, you know, there's all kinds of coyotes. So you really get to play with those AI features and stuff. So I would encourage anyone to go ahead and download the app and just click that demo button. You don't even have to create an account, no email or anything like that, but you get to use that full app, and really, it's kind of that, you know, try it before you buy it deal.
Mark, it's been a lot of fun comparing notes with you, how you use your cameras, how I use mine. I mean, I always learn a little something hearing how people do it their way. It's been fun comparing notes with you. I can't wait, you know, to kind of take some of this stuff that you've given me ideas on and move it back to my property and start using my game cameras this way. I really appreciate you joining us and really talking through all these different features, and it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I appreciate the time, and man, anytime. I'd love talking hunting. I love talking trail cameras. It's fun.
Nick, I learned some stuff today, man. I'm definitely going to be using this year with my game camera strategy. Some practical stuff I was overlooking. Just like I mentioned earlier, just facing that camera down a trail instead of looking across the trail. Like, I don't know why I've been overlooking that, but I have. You know, not canvassing an area is another thing that I'm guilty of. I kind of have this, kind of want to have a camera in every corner of the property kind of mindset. And I think I described this to you this year, that I was maybe off the mark with my game camera 50 yards in an area, in a stand that you and I hung together. And I went and hunted that in the rut, and man, I saw like 20 deer one afternoon, and none of them were within range. They were in sight, you know, but not quite in the right spot. And if I'd had multiple game cameras along that travel corridor, I would have probably picked up that pattern a lot sooner than I did. I'm real guilty of not canvassing an area, but the AI stuff is really cool to me. I like that most of the predictive learning features that I've seen on other hunting apps, and I may be wrong on this, there may be something that I've missed, but most of what I've seen, all of what I've seen, has been based off of someone's anecdotal influence. You know, like there's some weather data included in it and some hard data point, but at the end of the day, somebody said, well, I'm putting, you know, more emphasis on this as a predictor of deer movement than I am on some other factor. And it doesn't sound like that's what's going on with the game plan system. They are using localized data points to produce these models for that area. That's really cool to me.
Yeah, I can tell you that there are some predictive algorithms that are better than others that have less of that human bias, but that's the first time I've heard of one that was that hyper-localized, which I think is really going to be an advantage. That was interesting to me. And for real, I know you and I have this conversation, it seems like weekly. Like in years past, I've shot 8 to 10 deer a year. This year I shot one. So when you're pressed for time like that, I think being able to pick up some cameras, and I was thinking as we were having the show, you know, like, you know, I can realistically only buy so many cameras, but if you're buying those cameras, and the cameras and the subscription to the app gets you access to some of the information from those other cameras that you know are out there in your woods. That's a pretty big leg up. Like that's a pretty big pro. That kind of sways me a little bit. I got to admit, between like something like a spy point or something like that. Like if I can get access to your camera's information in a small way, that's pretty huge to me. And then I think also something that you'll appreciate is when he talks about being able to filter and not get every little deer picture that comes
Yeah.
through. Like the idea that, you know, because I'm bad enough, I'm sure you're the same way. You know, I get phantom vibrations in my leg thinking I've got a text or an email. You know, even if my phone's not in my pocket, it manages to vibrate my leg. So
Yeah.
being able to turn everything off and just tell it, look, I don't want the 50,000 nighttime pictures. I don't care about those. I just want you to let me know if there's a picture of a buck on that ridge
Yep.
between legal shooting light.
Don't bother me till it's a buck. That's good. That'll keep me a lot more productive at work.
That you'll see me looking off to the corner of the screen a little bit less during work meetings
Or
if
maybe it won't keep me, because then it's like, wait a minute, my phone just vibrated. All right, I gotta leave. I don't feel good
Yeah,
anymore, y'all.
that's it. Sorry, Nick. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
All right. Very cool stuff coming out of Moultrie. They are innovating big time over there.
Yeah, I think they're leading the pack.
This week's show is brought to you by Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. And also, Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen, so here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list, and wherever you are listening to the podcast, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.